Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple's identity refreshing!
Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing High Hopes. Smiling through a broken nose. Oh, High Hopes. High Hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo! Another edition of the Hopes Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. Jack, I don't know that I ever remember a harder season with the Yos in terms of, like, normally, you know, it's a good Yo, it's a bad Yo. Like, I just, it's bad now. Like, more bad than good. They, you know, walk it off yesterday to salvage the series. Yeah. But it's just, it's such a weird time for this team. It's been a weird season. It's a weird moment.
Yeah, I was explaining to someone down here at the beach, my cousin-in-law Carly, who is a big podcast listener, and you know, has recently gotten into the Phils, like the last 3 years, like very, very deep, you know, diehard Phils fan. And I was like, Carly, you know, this is one of those seasons that's going to put some hair on your chest as a Phillies fan. Like that is what it is. It's been up and down, some real downs. I mean, this Blue Jays series, you could make the case if they had Rob Thompson as the manager and almost anyone else at third base, that is a series sweep, because it should have been a series sweep. And it wasn't. It wasn't. And thankfully, they were able to sneak one out yesterday, because I tell you what, it would have been meltdown city. I mean,
we were all ready to lose it.
Their inability to play baseball the right way, or watching them try to play baseball the right way, like, actively hurts my baseball soul. They are atrocious at playing baseball. Play it. And every time they win, it feels like extra innings. It is by accident.
Totally.
It's crazy.
And like yesterday, Bob Vetrone, not a great stat in and of itself, but not great for us. But Luis Arraez, 945 games with other teams, had gone 0-6 once in his career. He's got like six games with the Phillies. He's already got an 0-6. That we're infecting Luis Arraez, even, Jack.
Yes, they are infecting Luis Arraez. 0-6 for him is crazy. I feel like he's hit a ton of balls like to the warning track, which is infuriating in and of itself. It's him going 0-6 does feel like a disaster, given what he is, and even that ball that he hit, that Stubby, I could not believe that Garrett Stubbs
unbelievable. I mean, it was a perfect throw and all that, but you got to be kidding me.
It was short. I get it. But also, like, he was backtracking, you know?
Yeah. And he also was, like it looked weird even running. He was, like, running, like, real wide. It was so strange. It was a strange moment. And it was, and look, Arraez also, I thought Friday night was, like, the seventh inning, and he comes up with the bases loaded, and it was Chase Utley night, and he's the new second base. And I was like, oh my God, this is meant to be. This is perfect. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, got out in that spot too. It just felt like a weekend full of like moments where you were expecting something good to happen, and instead they didn't happen. And then the Phillies would give it up after that. You know, it was an incredibly frustrating series. And even the win yesterday was incredibly frustrating. I mean, Kirkering, I mean, that was a disaster. I mean, Don Mattingly, God forbid you take a guy out in the middle of the inning when he clearly doesn't have it. Like, what a crazy thought. That, I mean, Mattingly has done such a horrendous job with the bullpen. And again, we all get it. I mean, he doesn't have a lot to work with. And even Killian this weekend, you know, we'll get to that. That's a bummer. It's probably going to be out for a little while there too. But, you know, even without a lot to work with, it's just the moments in it. Like, it feels like he's constantly making the wrong decisions to me.
I totally agree. Again, like the qualifier is who is he supposed to go to? But at the same time, you have Brooks Raley, who has a 2-something ERA, and you're pitching him in the sixth down 2, and then you're giving out that forces you to go Alvarado when it's all of a sudden a 4-2 ball game. Brooks Raley has to pitch in extras yesterday, which you shouldn't have had to have been in because you have him warmed up. You haven't warmed up for the lefty. You did it. You had it in the right spot. He was ready to go. They have JT slowly walk to the mound. Here's an obvious decision of pulling him and getting one of your guys in there. And he just sticks with Kirkering. The faith that he has in Kirkering and Alvarado are going to come back to bite this team. First off, Alvarado will show fits and spurts of being the old Alvarado, but he's just someone that you cannot trust. And I mean, Kirkering, we have to know by now, is someone that they cannot trust. Now, the issue is there's no one really else out there. I mean, Killian's gonna be done for the year. There's no
I think
way
so too. Yeah, I mean, we know how bad obliques are for hitters and pitchers with the twisting and the, you know, all that. And it seemed like a pretty semi-severe one too. So,
well, I rewatched it this morning, and you could tell the pitch before it happened. He was like, "Oh no!" And then he threw the last pitch like 90 miles an hour, and he like just limped off the mound. So that's a really bad scene. So, you know, I almost have frustrations with a lot of different, like all different phases of the team. I have frustration with Mattingly. I think that he's just been atrocious after the first 6 weeks of the season. And, you know, can Alex Cora just, you know, wrap it up with the family and get on up here? We got some things to accomplish. I would probably break back Thompson for the last 2 months of the year. They figured it out. They figured out they got off to the bad start, and now they, you know, righted the ship a little bit, but we might need Topper back here for the stretch run. And I'm incredibly frustrated with Dave Dombrowski that we're short after a deadline. And the Killian thing is unfortunate. Even with Killian, he is a project that you think has interesting traits that could turn into a back end option.
The control is what made him worth getting. It's not for this year. It's the fact that he's here for 5 years theoretically. That's why you got him.
So you're an arm short there. You're already short. You're hanging on by a thread with the starting staff, praying that none of them get hurt, because if they get hurt,
and that's with Nola pitching well. Like, Nola's been good for a couple months now, you know, or 6 weeks, whatever it is, you know.
You survived the Painter thing. It doesn't look like he's going to miss any time, which is great. And then I'm just frustrated with him because he didn't rectify the Alec Bohm situation. And that dude is done here. Like, he is done here. When the Phillies win the World Series here, and you're putting together the compilation of bad takes, and Alec Bohm is World Series MVP, you can re-rack this if you want. I don't care. That dude is done here. And the fact that they keep just trotting him out there because he was their third overall pick, and because he is someone who is technically a homegrown player that turned out to be a competent major leaguer, which I think is the only reason he's still here, so they can prop up, well, we're not that bad at this. Look at Alec Bohm. You know, and Bryce has definitely worked his way into the mix of being one of their success stories.
No doubt.
Very, very good since June 1. We'll get more into him as we go on here. But not just pulling the plug on this thing, and this is shaping out to be the worst case scenario, James, where he is just going into the tank. He is just going into the tank. He had the RBI yesterday. Great. He had a good scoop. What was that?
He had a Friday. Big intentional walk, Jack. Come on. Thank you,
well,
John
thank you,
Schneider.
John Schneider.
Oh, crazy. Like, one of, honestly, it might be in this, like, since 2022, it might, like, outside of Robert Suarez over Hader, and we know why that happened, it might be the single worst managerial decision we've seen against the Phillies. Like, it is an unreal decision to walk Bohm there.
Do you, you know, last podcast when you were talking about how you wish managers would just manage with their gut? It was one of those things where you just got to use your gut here and say, you got to understand that Derek Hill is on a bit of a heater when it comes to, you know, having big moments. And Alec Bohm absolutely going through it. So, yeah, it's incredibly frustrating.
All right. I want to get to more specifics from the weekend. And look, I do. There was some good this weekend in that, you know, I thought Chase's speech was all time great. Like, I was really blown away. It's, I think, the longest he's talked, the most he's talked. And I want to get to that alumni weekend. Thank God they didn't get swept and blow it in front of all the greats yesterday. I've seen all those people in the field. I'm like, you're going to freaking blow this lead, the whole thing. Super frustrating. All right. So we're going to get to all that in a sec. But first, it is Monday, August 10th. We are 3 days away. Thursday, August 13th, La Scala Fire in the Northeast. We're going to be there for the Thursday night game, the Field of Dreams games, the Phillies and Twins in Iowa, playing with the cornfields and the whole thing. We'll be doing baseball movie trivia to win Phillies tickets. It's going to be an awesome, awesome event. It's also my 15th wedding anniversary with Emily. So I can, you know, I could celebrate with everyone else instead of her. So that'll be fun. But it's going to be awesome. Seriously, coming out, we're going to have such a great time. And like, what a unique thing, Jack. It's a newer thing, this Field of Dreams game. And the old unis look awesome. I just think, as frustrated as we are right now, seeing the Phils play in that you know situation is going to be neat.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing a lot of these kind of
national like things. Yeah.
Showcase events. I think they're probably the sickest jerseys I've seen them wear. I think they
unbelievable.
They crushed the
jerseys. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so good to see the Phantom first pitches yesterday in honor of Moonlight Grandma's.
Which
old favorite came back. Yeah. The Jeff Singer, who could forget, one of our guys.
I
Will
thought
Toppy.
That was a neat idea. I thought that was a cool thing for this. So for those who don't know what Jack's talking about, like they brought back four players who were technically on the Phillies roster, but never actually got into a game. And they all throw out the first pitch. I think that's a really cool idea, personally.
Yeah, I guess my thing is that I do wish I could have, you know, you know how when they call the Hall of Famers?
Oh,
whatever,
you should have been there. Is this what you're saying? That you never pitched in the... Okay,
just checking. This is what I'm saying. When they call Hall of Famers, sometimes they record the calls and put it out and say,
Sure.
So I just wish that there was a recording of like Will Toffey and of when they called him. And he's like,
yeah,
me? When that's stupid. I was a Philly. No, I'm pretty cool. Sure he has a pennant ring. They invited everyone else back. You know, like I Bubby Rossman has a world.
Gotta love it.
Pennant
gotta
ring.
Gotta love it.
Yeah. The random guys of the 22 Phils. I think Muziotti has one, Simone Muziotti.
Sure.
Listen, of course, all those guys. Hey, they all played a small Legends. Part in helping that team win the National League pennant. So you got to respect that.
That's right. So well said. All right.
Thank you.
So coming out with us Thursday night, it's going to be awesome. All right. Let's get to the – let's start with the baseball, and then we'll get to the alumni stuff and Chase. Do you want to go game by game, or do you want to go specific – situations, players, how do you want to attack it? Because it was
there's enough from each game, so
yeah, that's what I figured, because they were all close. Let's go Friday. Obviously Friday frustrating because, you know, the Wheeler stuff with the mound was, you know, the whole kind of adversarial kind of started the weekend off with a kind of a, you know, a little anger and a little frustration seeing Wheeler, you know, the FU and all that stuff. It was a weird, what did you make? And then Wheeler, you know, not his best stuff.
No.
I think, you know, more disappointing that it felt like they had it at the, you know, late, the comeback, the last bat bases loaded, had a chance and couldn't capitalize on it. But what did you make of the whole Wheeler mound thing, the outing, and the fact that, like, you know, Wheeler went into the All-Star break so strong with those two like lights out outings, and you, the anger was there. And he hasn't been bad since the break, but he's not been quite as sharp as heading in where yet.
Yeah, I mean, he has not been. Him and Chris, man. Like, him and Chris.
Both. Both.
At the end of the day, things look fine. But in watching them, I mean, Wheeler walked four guys on Friday, I believe. So, and he just could not.
Yeah, and Sanchez, the game we went to was at Thursday. It was like, it took him 100 pitches to get through five innings, you know?
I know. And with Wheeler, he's just, he's all over the zone. Like, he's not in the zone. He's just like an inch or more outside the strike zone pretty consistently. So, you know, I mean, maybe this is a little bit of the fatigue and a little bit of like a dead arm period coming back from the TJ, or not back from TJ, from the thoracic outlet and everything else. So, you know, I think he's kind of just going
saying it because it's always TJ in these situations. Yeah,
I know. So I think I'm almost chalking this both up with them as this is the dog days of summer. They pitch all the time. And I fully expect that by September, they're going to make the mechanical adjustments and be in the strike zone. But certainly right now, it's going to be a little bit rocky. Now, again, both of their stuff there is so good that it ultimately doesn't matter. Like, they will most likely keep you in ball games and give you a chance to win like they did. But it's certainly going to be one of those periods. I mean, what was that? Nathan Lucas dropped the foul off 15 pitches. You never see that. You never see that against Zach Wheeler. So, yeah, I mean, he was not great. It felt like he was staked to the lead and this game should be done. And not as bad as the Lizardo start in Miami, but he just let them hang around when Wheeler usually steps on a throat. And he did not step on a throat on Friday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not super concerned about it. I just worry about the both physical and mental workload that these guys have, in that when you're Sanchez and Wheeler and you know the bullpen's playing the way they are and you know how inconsistent the offense is, like, I'm sure those guys know when they take the mound the pressure that's on them every time and how important those guys are. Like, it's, you know, when you have to pitch great, when you there's no margin for error, like, it does add to it. So, yeah, I just worry about the workload heading in if they keep pitching a lot of innings and all that, that, you know, to the point we've said, I mean, the only way this team is winning the World Series is if those three aces are great, and then you need a lot of other stuff to happen. But, like, they're going to have to carry them. That's the heart of the team. It's the best thing that we have to count on. So I just worry about using them up, getting to the playoffs, and then not having any juice left, you know?
Well, I mean, that's been the advantage that the Dodgers have had for the last two seasons, is they sign all of these guys, and then they basically give them off in the middle of the season. And they bring them back and say, hey, we'll see you in October, and let's go win a World Series. Whereas the Phillies, they have a great starting rotation, but they also have to ride those guys to get even in the dance. And what's happening recently is they're going shorter and shorter in games. Like, Sanchez has been a six-inning guy, Wheeler, six-inning guy, Nola, five, Painter, four, five, you know, like that. Lizardo's given them good length. He's leveling up and pitching great at this point. And then you're turning it over to a unit of the team. Like, if there's a unit of the team that I trust the least heading into October, it's not the offense.
It's the bullpen. I think we can all agree. And I was saying this to Emily, and you and I have talked about this on the pod so many times over the years, and I think 2020 we talked about it nonstop. But I don't think there's anything more demoralizing for the players themselves than a bullpen you can't trust. I mean, we've seen it. Remember in 2020, we always used to talk about, like, looking at Bryce's face or JT's face when these guys would run in. You could, like, actually see them deflating. You could see them go, and obviously the famous one, the JT with the Jared Hughes running in and all that. But, like, that felt like an example of many things that season where it was like these guys, like, you could tell that they are losing energy, they're losing belief every time that bullpen runs in. And it's obviously not as bad as 2020 right now, but I do think that can really suck the life out of guys and make it harder for them to keep fighting, keep pushing, because it's like you almost get a what's the point kind of feeling of it sometimes, you know?
Sometimes, yeah. And you have to fight through that and almost pretend it doesn't
forget
happen.
Them.
It
just does. Do your job and don't worry about it, you know, and you can't control it, but it's still it's hard. They're humans, you know.
Well, and since when is Kirkring throwing 94? I mean, he was 94 yesterday. Is he going through a dead arm period too?
They've had to use him a lot, you know?
I know. And I mean, The one nice part is that they should get Alex McFarlane up here. God forbid, you know, we could have our
hundred mile an hour
throwing, you know, top.
You should have been up the day after the trade deadline. Tuesday and training, should have been up and here, and that's it. What are we doing? Like, what? It's so crazy.
I think the Iron Pigs lost the game 19-0 two days ago, and nice. He was the only one to have a scoreless in it. So he did his job. He did his job, as he often does. So it would certainly probably be a little bit of egg on their face if McFarlane comes up and it is just great. And I think he is eligible because when he got sent down, he has to stay down.
They have to wait a few days. Yeah, I think it's like Sunday maybe or something like that. It's soon, but they have to wait a few days, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I believe it is today. So we'll see if he made the trip out to St. Louis. If it's not today, it'll be tomorrow.
Oh, it's today. I thought it was tomorrow. Okay. Okay.
I think it's the 10th.
Okay. Okay.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, so let's get to Saturday.
Well, can we talk about the Friday night debacle and extra innings?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
well, yeah. It's just you do all this work to get back into the game. You know, Luis Arraez works a 10-pitch at bat, and it is, okay, now we go. Like, we got him. We got him where we want him.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's absolutely refreshing!
And there he is, Mr. Inevitable. And what do you think you're going to do with a 0-0 fastball in on your hands?
I know.
And
dude,
just the way he hit it was so embarrassing for someone that is he's a tough one. He's a tough watch. But for someone that is 6'5", put as like measly of a swing as he could on that baseball, why are you in such a rush to get out? Why is your main priority getting to the plate is how quickly can I get in the dugout and start throwing my equipment and having a little bit of a temper tantrum?
By the way, that video, you know,
oh, he did. I'm so mad. He's a tough one, man.
I hate watching him. I hate it. It's not fun. You know, he takes away our enjoyment on a night to night basis. You know, it's frustrating. And by the way, Friday was they lost in the ninth. They came back. It wasn't extras. The next two. Yeah. But
felt like every game was extra.
Totally. No, it did. It did. And they came. And again, it felt like with Chase there and like the whole night, it was like it just felt weak. You know what I mean? It felt like a weak showing considering the circumstances.
I would agree. And the whole rubber thing was weird. You know,
it was
weird.
What did you make of that? I mean, that was a weird thing for the Blue Jays to do, especially with Mattingly and the connection and stuff. It just felt like a strange. So apparently, for those who didn't see it, the Jays bench coach was the one who originally brought it up. I guess Schneider had already talked to the umps about it prior because they had noticed it or something. And then the bench coach was the one who like called it out. And obviously Wheeler was like not psyched about it. What did you make of the whole thing? It was weird is what it was. Especially for not rivals. Like it's a team that faces each other twice a year. It was just a strange situation.
It felt like when Girardi pulled the Scherzer after the first
yes. attack. What a great call. Remember how mad Scherzer was? He was furious.
He like stripped down on the mound.
He
was hot. Yeah, it was wild. It was unfortunate that Wheeler didn't just shove after that. It would have been really awesome if he says bleep you and then, you know, he retires nine straight batters.
Ten in a row. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And again, he was just off all night. But it really does feel like, and it feels like the Phillies have gotten there as well, you know, back to the bone thing. It feels like that it has reached a breaking point. I don't think they're going to DFA him. I would be very surprised if they DFA him. But I also,
at this point, I mean, it'd be like, you know, I think they should, but, you know.
We'll see. I mean, like, do you get crazy and bring up, you know, Felix Reyes or Keaton Anthony to man first base for a little bit and send Alec down with some, not send him down because I can't send him down, but
I can't.
Phantom IL
him. Put him on the bench. We're a bench hitter, you know? Yeah.
And by the way, we're jumping all over the place. How insane is it that like Stubby is the pinch runner,
by
the
way? It's crazy. Like the fact that he's running in that situation is nonsense. Like that is such poor roster management, managing, like all of it. Like, what are we doing?
He's the best option off the bench in 23. You're like, he's technically the backup catcher, but he's not even the backup catcher when Marchand's healthy.
Exactly.
Designated pinch runner slash clubhouse DJ.
Honestly, it's asinine. It is asinine. It really is.
When you
want to point to Dombrowski and be like, dude, what the hell? And then Mattingly using him, but that, it's not more on Dombrowski.
When you really sit there and think about the management of having three catchers when they're all healthy, it's
crazy.
It's insane. It's insane.
It's malpractice. Anyway, go ahead.
But no, I mean, like the bone thing, they sat him down on Saturday. They batted. They hit him
eighth
on Sunday. I mean,
finally, by the way, finally, you know,
yeah, something at least. But what's frustrating is the trade deadline was 7 days ago. It's in 7 days. They went from this is our infield.
This is our five hitter. You know, this is our first baseman. Yeah.
Like being able to keep that bat in the lineup and Harper going to right field. I mean, it's just what a dream scenario. And his response post trade deadline has been just go into the toilet. That's how he's played. And then the freaking, you know, Saturday where do you think you're going? You're gonna throw the guy out rather than just getting the out at first base.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's dude. They are the dumbest baseball team I think I've ever seen in my life. It's every single
night.
And it's
been years. Exactly. And it's years of this. It's like this group of guys are dumb at baseball.
And that's why it's such a. The highs are high. They've had their highs, but they're just a tough watch.
They're
just a tough watch. Whether it's the bullpen one night, whether it's the offense one night, whether it's one of the bottom two starters, whether it's the defense, whether it's the base running, like almost every single night they do something. And then now you got to factor in the manager and whatever decision making he's making. They're a tough one. Much like Alec Boehm, they are a tough one.
Yeah, he is emblematic of the whole team. All right, before we get to Sunday, quickly, we mentioned him for a second, but you know, Nola has been better. Like, if you're looking for something where it's, you know, he's been pretty damn good, like 11 starts, I think it is, with like three runs or less, something like that. He's been pretty solid and looked good again, and it's so strange they just decide not to score for him ever, it feels like. But Nola, how real is it to you?
Well, And what's a bummer too is, you know, he was probably going to come out of the game anyway, but he had a knee contusion as well.
Yeah.
So again, they are hanging on by a thread with these starters staying healthy because there's not exactly another option. So yeah. I think the thing that's kind of happened with Nola is, so I think when he was coming out of his funk, he was keeping the ball down, and that was really, really key for him. Of course, there was a time where he'd miss a spot by a millimeter and it would get blasted 700 feet, which is, I mean, he's got to just be like, are you kidding me? I can't even make a little mistake.
I know. There's no like grace for him with it. You know?
No, he's cursed.
No one ever like fouls off a Nola mistake, it seems like, you know, ever.
And if they do, they're furious at themselves.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But I think what's happened with him is even when he goes up, it's spotted really well. I think the biggest thing that he has found in this stretch is, and I don't know how to quantify it. I don't know how to reveal as to why all of a sudden it happened. I just think that all of a sudden his command has come back and he's actually able to pitch more up in the zone when he wants to, not by mistake. Like by mistake, he'll miss and he'll get crushed. But with intent and purpose, I do think that he is spotting way better up in the strike zone. So when he wants to go up there and with his ability to go up there, it allows him to tunnel his curveball off of that. And if like the people always talk about Nola pitching low in the zone with the fastball. And it's like, I agree with you. Like he should be low in the zone with the fastball. The problem is that he throws that knuckle curve so much that if you're a hitter and the second you see that it's not low in the zone, you're going to say that's a knuckle curveball and they can sit on it and smoke it. So why he has to pitch up in the zone is so that he can work the curveball off of it and show that, hey, if it's going high, it's not
automatically. They don't know what's coming. Yeah.
It's not automatically a knuckle curveball. So that's why he has to do it. So I just think it all comes down to both sides of the plate. He's even starting to get a little bit of that two-seamer that used to start at guys' rib cages. He's starting to get that pitch to come back a little bit. So even some velocity's come back. I mean, he's been like touching 95, which is really, really good. Are we going to sit here and say that I trust him in a postseason start or even trust him in his next start? I think we're still very, very skeptical of that. But there is more and more examples of him righting the ship and being a competent big league pitcher than being someone that we got to talk about DFAing after the season, which. So, yeah, it's good. I'm happy for Knowles. He's been a great
Billy. If he could just be competent for the, you know, moving forward as opposed to, like we said, you know, a $27 million abyss.
Also, really cool. He had 2,000 strikeouts and that moment was nice.
Yeah.
Him being one of 94 pitchers all time to have 2,000 strikeouts is hilarious.
Is hilarious.
Would love to see, like, not to. Of like the modernish guys, is he the worst one? Is it to death?
Probably. I would think so. I don't know. I haven't seen the list, but yeah, I would guess so.
Yeah. Also, pretty jarring watching him versus Scherzer and how that used to be like the thing.
Who will ever forget it? I mean, that was it, man.
And now Scherzer's throwing slop up there. Although, of course, he was shoving like for
ADRA
a little bit.
Almost. I know. Of course.
Yeah. Thankfully, they broke through and did their thing. I would say I'm encouraged. I don't want to jump off the deep end because I know it could come back to bite me. But I'm happy with where they're at with Aaron Nola, and I don't totally dread the days that he takes them out.
All right, Sunday, and then we'll get to the Chase stuff and all that. But look, we've talked a bit about Sunday. I think it was more frustrating than positive. It was like, thank God they won more than like, yay, they won, because, you know, the blowing the lead, the whole thing. We've talked a lot about Kirkering and Mattingly. Anything else from that game that sticks out to you? I mean, Zeus has been great. We don't, you know, need to go too deep into that. But where you at?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention Jesus. I mean, he's just been so money, and
he's been their best pitcher for like 3
stuff
weeks
wise. Stuff wise, he has the best stuff of the starters. He's awesome, and I thought what he did yesterday. He lost it a little bit in the fifth, which was annoying, but I think that, you know, for the most part yesterday, he was efficient and he got some quick outs. I will say it's turning into one of my big pet peeves because I feel like it's, again, once a game or once or twice a week. Like, pitchers just can't throw to bases anymore. I don't get it. Like, why throw the ball second base? First base is mostly fine because they do it more often. Just can we put in some extra work and make sure that you can turn a double play when the ball is hit to you? I feel like I haven't seen them turn a double play with the ball hit back to the pitcher in years.
Yeah, it feels like forever. I'm with you.
It feels like that's happened. it's a routine play. You have to change your arm angle a little bit because, but can we be athletic? And then the other thing is just the refusal to back up bases. What happened to the game that I loved? I'm sorry that you allowed a base hit and you allowed a run. Go back up the bag. Okay. I mean, there was a moment yesterday where Zeus was it late to cover home, and I forget who was on third. I think it was Straw, and he was about to go and make a beeline for home because no one was there covering. Like, rarely do I do the get off my lawn thing with the game.
I know,
but pitchers' inability to throw to bases or back up bases drives me up a wall. Drives me up a wall. Throwing to bases is just putting in the work. It's just putting in the work.
And backing up is just doing your job. I mean, the backing up is even more infuriating. Like, I agree that throwing is infuriating too, but at least you have to throw a baseball. Backing up is just running somewhere. Like, what are we talking about here?
I know. So, yeah, check your ego at the door. Check your ego at the door. That's what we got.
If you didn't like the pitch you made, go do your job. Yeah, I'm with you. All right.
Zeus has been great. Zeus has been really, really good. And then the Kirkering thing was a disaster. We know that. Extra innings. Infuriating situational baseball per usual. Boom, another big spot that he was not able to come through in.
Yeah, the pop out was brutal. Brutal.
Brutal. John Schneider walking him was brutal. And once again, Derek Hill. How many wins has Derek Hill? How many wins has Derek Hill been worth for this team?
I mean, all right. So World Series on the line, bottom of the ninth inning, probably top of the ninth if they make it, they probably won't be home. But and you can have any Philly at the plate. How far down the list before you get to Derek Hill? Because I don't think it's that far. You know, like, I think you want Harper at the plate. You want Schwarber. You want maybe you want to rise and maybe like Stott. Is there anyone else you're taking over him in that spot
this year? JT.
Maybe
not over just him, but JT's in the mix.
I'm just talking over Hill. Like, point being that Derek Hill, a guy who's probably a bench guy, has played more, but it, like, clutch wise, like, I trust him more than the vast majority of the roster, which is crazy.
Yeah. Still waiting for Trey's first big hit.
Good luck with that one. Yeah.
One of these years. Yeah. I do think I can count on one hand Trey's.
Oh, big hit. He had a couple homers in that Braves series, and I feel like that was it.
He had a home run, and yeah, I mean,
maybe the Astros early in it. I mean, not the Astros, the Diamondbacks early, and that was about
it. He had a Diamondbacks hit early, and then he went to the tank. Yeah. He got a walk-off against the Giants in August of 23, which was, you know, a magical moment after the ovations. Oh, but he's had a couple this year of, you know, two outs, runner in scoring position that he has come through. I believe it.
Yeah, I feel like he gets a lot more of the 5-0 solo shots, though.
It's sometimes, yeah, but the big moments, I believe we're still about five.
Yeah, I agree. Big moments, a guy who came through in many big moments, including maybe the greatest defensive play in the history of the franchise in terms of moment and meaning and all that. I thought this weekend, for me, the highlight of the whole weekend was Chase. And we love Chase. He's, you know, one of the city's favorite players ever in our lifetime. He's a lot of people's favorite Philly. He's my favorite Philly. But I wasn't expecting much from him in the speech. You know,
he's your favorite Philly?
Yeah, well, so Schmidt was growing up, and then Chase of that era. So it's like those two in my lifetime are my two favorites.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I don't think I ever knew he's your favorite player. I always knew you loved Chase. Yeah.
I love Chase. My favorite of that whole crew, the whole team. I just loved him. You know, I think a lot of people did because of the way he played, the way he went about his business. We know that. And that's what I thought, Jack. So I was not expecting a great speech. I was expecting him to go up and say a few things and get down. He talked for like 20 something minutes, which is unbelievable. And I was fine with it. I know I'm sure players are a little annoyed, but like, I think the people who went to that game went there to see Chase. So like, take your time, pal. The rain delay made it annoying, but Jack, I was blown away. I thought he was eloquent and interesting and funny. And I thought particularly him, and I feel like whenever like the true, like most beloved athletes of our lifetime in the city, the Kelseys, the BGs, the Chases, like those type of guys who have universal approval. I feel like whenever they talk about playing here and about us as fans, it's like exactly correct. Like, they get it. They understand us, what we want, what you have to do here, and they talk about it so easily. Like, it's such an obvious thing, and I don't get why more people can't understand it. But I thought Chase, particularly talking about what it means to play here, what it meant to him to play here, and what it is to be a part of this, you know, sports ecosystem. I thought it was awesome. Like, I was so happy and so blown away.
Yeah, and it was one of those where it's hard not to well up. I mean,
totally. just watching
him out there and hearing him talk about the city, hearing him talk about, you know, the team, and he crushed it. I mean, it was the longest thing we ever heard. His World Series speech was four words, five words. So, you know, a little bit different than that. The other thing that hit me is, dude, we got old quick. I mean, we're here watching Chase Utley get inducted into the Phillies Wall of Fame.
Jack, I said it to Emily as we were watching it. I was like, Emily, I was like, I was 24 when this guy started his career. Like, I'm watching, I was like an adult for his whole career. Now he's doing, like, it's next level weird for me. I'm right there with you, buddy.
I can't believe it. There's like a whole generation that doesn't understand peak Chase. And a couple of things that I actually felt off the weekend is, everyone talks about how hard he plays, and I know, I think it's part of what makes Chase Chase, but it's almost like that discredits how great of a player Chase Utley was.
It's a great point, dude. You're right. We almost forget. I mean, like, he was one of the great, he's one of the best hitting second basemen in the history of the sport, and he's an amazing defensive player, too. Like, he is great.
Yeah, and I think the way he's talked about almost now is like he was just Charlie Hustle out there. Like,
yeah, you're right.
He's talked about as if he's Brandon Nimmo, like running to first base. It's not Brandon Nimmo. This guy, for a 9-year period, was arguably the most valuable player in baseball, along with Albert Pujols. Like, again, WAR is not perfect, but it does tell you, it tells you a grand story of who the most valuable players in baseball are. And I think it overvalues second base defense a little bit. I wish that there was a way for like shortstop defense valued more. I think that has propped up Chase's defense. I think that more than anything.
I agree, but he was a great defensive second baseman, but I agree with you.
Yes. He had, he had some yips in the postseason that are kind of famous, but regardless,
he also had some all time. I mean, again, the play against Tampa with the fake throw to first and throw home, like arguably the greatest defensive play in the history of the franchise in the discussion.
And quick turn to second base, which you appreciate, especially with what we've seen.
Always.
Double plays used to just get turned.
I said to Emily when they were showing like highlights and stuff, I was like, we don't talk enough about how lucky we were to have Jimmy and Chase together for as long as we did. I mean, that was just so, it was money. It was like automatic. They were so great together out there.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. It was really just hitting home of these, like, it made me want this team to win a World Series so bad, because I think they deserve to be remembered and talked about in a similar light as the OA team. And the thing that I keep going back to too, and we might have talked about this last podcast, but we always talk about the 08 team was like the worst team of that run, 09, 10, 11. Mm-hmm. And I think that also discredits how unbelievable that team was, just from an offensive and defensive. The defense has been, they were a really
good position. Seriously.
Really,
I mean, Ryan Howard, the worst defender on the field, and he was fine, you know?
And Burrell, but yeah.
And Burrell, yes. But I mean, when you've got Shane and Worth out there, when you've got, you know, three gold glove caliber infielders along with Howard, when you've got a fantastic catcher, like, they were, you're right. We don't talk enough. The hitting we talk about and how talented they were, we don't talk enough. That was a elite defensive baseball team.
Well, and then it's like, fast forward to now, and they're putting a third baseman at first base. They're putting a second baseman at third base. They have a center fielder playing shortstop. They have a first baseman playing right field. Like, it's so different. You know, that's how teams used to be built. Is you know, defense was factored in, but it was really cool. I thought Chase felt very authentic and genuine. And I think Uram tweeted out some quote from him about how
he's obsessed with the Philly fans. That was so great.
Yeah. He's like, they're obsessed with me. I'm obsessed with them. And I think it's good that Chase, and I don't know this for a fact, but I kind of felt like after he retired, he was always like wary about coming back to Philadelphia because it's always like a big deal when he comes back. You know, like it feels like there's a like, Chase is here. Probably can't go anywhere. And now that we're almost 20 years since they won a World Series, maybe he feels a little bit more comfortable coming back and it's not this big hoopla. But yeah, seeing those three, Howard, Utley, and Rollins, get celebrated and cheered every single time.
And having Howard pull down the, be the one to pull the, you know, the plaque, the, you know, curtain off the plaque, like Jimmy sitting right there in front with him. And so, like, the Phillies, and we've talked about this before, but they do such a great job with the alumni. Think about what there's like 60 players who came back. I mean, we're seeing all kinds of guys. And we talked about, you know, the fun ones like Oberholzer going, but like, you know, the Bobby Abreu and all these, like, just so many players from our past, from the time here. The Phillies do such a good job of making it a family. And I think that's something that is underrated as a sports fan when your franchise does that kind of stuff, because you know, we all love these guys. They matter to us. We grew up with them. This and that, like to see them come back, it really is special. And I thought this weekend was a great example of all that.
Now, I did go down on Friday because I did to pay homage to Chase.
Leo, did you wait through the rain?
I did, shockingly. Now, one member of the house was not thrilled with my decision to stay and hang out for Chase.
The one who had to watch the two kids by herself, I wonder? Yes.
Probably
while pregnant? Yes.
My 8-month pregnant wife.
Yes, I am sure she was super psyched with you.
She's like, sorry.
It looks like it's going to be like an 8 o'clock thing, so it's going to be a little while. Okay. Yeah. You can try fun.
We had to pay for that one for a little bit. But I was like, listen, it's Chase. Yeah. I got it. I'm not missing Chase. So I was down there Friday.
I'm happy left. When. It seemed really cool there.
I left immediately after the ceremony.
I'm sure. Yes.
So it was jarring watching a Phillies game end at midnight at home. That was weird.
Oh, I know. Tell me about it. Yeah.
I did get tight when I saw Lieberthal and Ed Wade out there again. Every single time.
I know.
I get tight. Lieberthal's sitting there like next to Carlton and J-Roll and Schmitty, and like they keep panning to everyone. It's like, well, what's Mike Lieberthal doing there? So I got tight. And then I don't think I'm ever going to get over the Ed Wade thing. If you wanted to put... He is in the Phillies Wall of Fame because he did not trade Chase, Jimmy, Ryan, and Cole. The myth that he drafted them is even the most.
Mike Arbuckle drafted them, but he does deserve credit. Like, you got to give him some credit for keep hanging on to them.
Yes, but he doesn't deserve to be on the Wall of Fame for doing that. Why is he on there?
Expecting the Ed Wade slander.
Well, it's just crazy to me that he is up there, and it's lying to people saying that he drafted them. Like, put Will Lever and Marty and Mike Arbuckle up there if you want. Mike Arbuckle deserves to be in there more than Ed Wade. He actually drafted those guys. He actually did it. Not Ed Wade, who the team wasn't that good to trade them. Why is he up there? If he is up there, then Ruben should be up there. Ruben should be on the wall because at least he won a pennant. He won three National League East titles.
He was a bat boy, a player. I mean, Ruben is a lifetime Philly, you know, which I do think in the Wall of Fame stuff, that's part of it all too, you know?
Ed Wade, and they did it the same night last year as when Rollins goes in. Why? You didn't have to put Ed Wade in the Wall of Fame. You didn't have to do it. This is
not what I was expecting today, but it's good work by you.
Also, why did they make like Chase's Chief so puffy on the...
I know.
It doesn't look like him.
That was a flawed part of it, but yes. It was great though. And I thought it was, thank God they won on Sunday because it would have completely ruined the weekend. All right. Take bag coming up. Shout out. to the Horse Tavern and Grill. Today's show is sponsored by Miller Lite and the Horse Tavern and Grill. Check out the Horse Tavern and Grill in Sellersville for every Phillies game. Enjoy $3.50 Miller Lite pints along with their legendary half-pound burgers and famous short rib fries. Miller Lite fills win. Celebrate responsibly. Fritzy.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly starts and advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Uh-oh. He is gone. There's no one sitting in the seat now. I wonder what happened here. Tucker, there he is. He's back. Just I look up. I finish the read. I'm reading away. I come up. There's an empty screen. I'm like, Fritzy, you're up. And then there's silence. It's like, oh, hey, there he is. What up, buddy?
We're going to make a clean edit of that. I left my when I realized that that my connection wasn't super great sitting on the front porch. Makes so sense. I left my Makes phone sense. Out there. So I had to go run and get it real quick.
Well, good work.
Well, I did knock my mic down. So that was
no, but you know, it could have been worse. So
it could have been worse. The Killian thing stinks. It's not like he was pitching unbelievably, but the bullpen is just it was already a dire situation. But you know, if he's going to miss time with an oblique injury, that's probably going to hamper him for the year. If I had to guess, I mean, it looked like he ripped the thing yesterday as he was coming off the mound. Maybe McFarland could come up and they could put, like, he could just
step in.
He can just step in and, you know, kind of go off. But he wasn't pitching that well, but he was really important from the standpoint of like they needed him. All right. The second thing here is 570 for Stott. 570. That's the extension for after the year.
Oh! I was thinking this. It's like I know his OPS is 752. I think like that's not what he's talking. What is 5 for 70?
It's 14 a year.
Can't you do a little? You think you don't think you get him a little cheaper than that? Like 5 for 60 or something like that. 5 for 55. Four for 50, something like that. That's what I'd like to do.
He's definitely
in consideration. Like he is for a guy who coming into the year, I think a lot, you know, there was hope after the second half last year and the whatever, but I think there's a large portion of Phillies fandom who was just like, this guy doesn't have it. You know, I like him as a ball player, but he just isn't good enough. So it's pretty exciting to see.
No, it's huge. And I mean, his stats since like June 1, I think, are yeah. I think he's hitting over 300, I think, since July. I mean, he's on a streak right now where he is, I mean, he's finally walking a lot more, which is big. Like, he's someone who's always had a good eye, and it never made sense why he would never walk more than he did. And it feels like slowly but surely, as he's getting more comfortable, he is walking more, he is getting big hits. He's not striking out, so he's still doing all of that stuff, which is really, really good. And all of a sudden,
Guys who can lay down a bump when he needs to. I mean,
yes. Geez, well, that's that. I mean, yesterday with.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I think that was JT's first bunt since 2018 or 2019.
Was it? Yeah.
I feel like it's been forever. And then, like, Trey, I just.
Dude, that's the one that annoys me. The JT thing happens. Like, Trey, it's like, are you. Like, you should be elite at bunting. Like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, it's not a weapon. It's not a weapon for him. So, since June 1, he's hitting 304 with an 850 OPS.
That's really good, man.
Yeah, with playing, obviously, at second base, elite second base.
I was about to say, yeah, but it's better for – it's a really good numbers for a second baseman, less good for a third baseman, but not his fault.
Yeah, not his fault at all, as we are we're still doing this thing because we have a 6'5 slap hitter. 43 games left, by the way. 43. Unless they make the playoffs, and there's a little bit more, but 43 games left. Also could be 43 games left for old Donnie Baseball.
Donnie Baseball. I think it probably should be. I think if nothing else, this has made it easier for us to be like, all right, we wanted Alex Cora theoretically anyway. I mean, coming into this season, if you said you could have Alex Cora, Don Mattingly, I would take Alex Cora 100 times out of 100, and I still would. So I think it'll make it a little easier to make that pivot because Alex Cora is a great manager.
Yeah, unless they go on some miracle run, which I think with this bullpen feels very, very hard to believe that they're going to go on. Unless, hey, Alex McFarland, he comes up. He's great. Maybe. We'll get to Gage. I don't think that's going to happen. It's been a tough go of it for old Donnie Baseball for a little while now.
Yeah.
And then last thing before a quick little minor league minute is Harper's just walking all the time now.
Like 10 in 10 games, I believe, right? Like it's great.
He had 4 yesterday. It's putting a lot of trust in his teammates. It also makes me think like you could have been doing this all year. You could have.
Now it might help that arises behind him, you know, so that does help a bit, you know, but yeah.
Of course. And he's climbing his way out of the slump that he went in. He's had 2 big slumps this year, like the 1-for-31 slump and the one that ended probably 10 games ago. And it's kind of hurt his overall numbers, but he looks like he is climbing out of it. And I think Marsh is slowly but surely climbing
out of
it. Which
is important because he's really been struggling. But to the Harper point, to your point, I agree with you. I think, yes, he's had a couple. The slumps were really bad, so they hurt his numbers, like you said. But personally, I think anyone who's watched, you know, every game or the majority of games this season, like Bryce has been one of their best players. Like, and he has been really, really good. Like I think Bryce Harper has shown up considering the offseason, the elite, this whole thing, and like elite, whatever. We could be semantics and stuff. Bryce has been one of their best players. He's been really good for them. And I really appreciate what he's given them this year.
Yeah. I mean, the 950 OPS seasons are probably done for him at this point, but
he's 33, man. You know, it's like, you know,
850 between 850 and 900 is where you expect Bryce to settle in. I couldn't believe that Schwarber got under 900 finally. Like his OPS heading into yesterday, I think it was like 890. I mean,
that was the biggest thing from yesterday was him hitting 2 home runs. And the second one being like a real, like the first one kind of eked out the opposite field. But, you know, the second one, a real home run. And just in general, I mean, July 18th was the no homer since then. It only had 3 in the month of, or since July 1st to begin with. To the point of we keep talking about, like, if Wheeler and Sanchez aren't great, they have no chance. If Schwarber's not hitting, and certainly not hitting home runs, they actually have no chance. Like, it's one of those things where he has to hit for them to have a chance.
Mm-hmm. And, you're kind of waiting for the real Schwarber run in the postseason. You know, I almost don't.
Yeah.
He had the 1 home run in the Mets game and then didn't, or the Mets series, and then did not get a hit after that last
and
year.
And had that one game against the Dodgers that and that was it. Yeah.
He also just might not be the kind of guy that you can like bank on in October. I almost just has to be like the once in a while home run. And I know that we're paying him a lot of money and stuff like that. I almost with him is just, you got to have a moment. Yeah, because I don't think he's a good enough hitter, pure hitter, to kind of sustain it. Whereas that's where you need the Trays, the Harpers, and the Arise.
Yeah, it's almost like you need those guys to hit. You need if Schwarber over a playoff run gives you 5 or 6 homers, but hits, you know, 200, that's fine. That's great. Yeah. That's what you need for. You just need him to pop some home runs in some spots for you. But to your point, I agree with you. Like, I don't. Like Harper's the guy who you hope can go on a tear and really just every at bat be impactful, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then quick little minor league minute. Gage looks tired. Like it looks like that it's kind of catching up to him. You know,
he
hasn't pitched more than 40 innings.
Never been over 40. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I mean, it's a big jump, you know?
It's a really big jump. And there was some unlucky stuff with his last start, but also just wasn't as sharp. And he's still up in the high 90s, but it's just not as precise. I mean, he's at 71 innings now, which is more than he has done. So I would love if they started transitioning him to a bullpen piece and help out this year, but I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe something that happens in the offseason, but even that, who knows? I mean, you might as well develop him as a starter as long as you can. So
if you think he can start, develop as a starter, you know?
Yeah. So I think he looks pretty tired. I don't know if that's going to be a realistic option, but McFarland is certainly, McFarland's certainly more of an option. And then, so we talk a lot.
Doesn't need to transition to the bullpen. McFarland can just be in the bullpen. You know, he's a bullpen pitcher already, which helps.
Correct. Yeah, it was tough. It's a tough week for my boys. You know, Overmuller got hit around up in Jersey Shore. Gage looks a little bit tired. Ramon's not here anymore. You know, we're battling through it. Bowker struck out a lot of guys again, but a lot of some runs. So, you know, you're battling your grinds through these times post trade deadline, and you hope you come out the other side brighter. We talk a lot about the DSL, of course. You know, Juan Parr, one of our baby boys, Francisco, the biggest baby boy.
All right, number one baby boy.
Yes, and he cooled off at the end of the week because he was on fire to start the week. But, you know, Francisco is perfectly fine. Juan Parra, very good, interesting player. The one we got to talk about all of a sudden is this Edwin Ramirez kid who's been hitting behind Francisco Renteria. He's hit over 400 with a
How many games?
He's been there most of the year. I mean, every time I check the box score, it seems like he is in it. But he is...
Well, not a super tiny sample size is the point. Like, he's hitting over a fair amount of at-bats. That's wild.
I've been waiting to bring up Edwin Ramirez for a little bit now. So he is an outfielder. But like that team, they're winning a lot of games. They're having some big offensive nights or days down there, which is very, very good to see. And... he's one to kind of keep your eye on. Parra, him, and Renteria feel like the main three down there, but they might have found some good pieces. Now this is the first year I've like really followed the DSL as I we're starting to get
invested in it. I mean, this is a new thing for us to actually have exciting Latin American players who are young. Like, we don't normally do that. So
yeah, and then
by the way, we've talked about, but that is such a big thing for the organization to lean into that. I mean, it has always been one of the major deficiencies of the Phillies compared to other teams.
Yeah, and then Willie G is having a very solid start to his Clearwater campaign. As it seems like once a night he is hitting a ball 100 plus miles an hour somewhere hard. So, like I said last podcast, you weren't there, but he is a tool shed, absolute tool shed. And if he can just cut down on the K's, cut down the strikeouts, there's a really good player there. And a solid start for Bogenpohl. He had his first home run this week. He is hitting over 300. You do see the eye. I think they're just going to continue working with him on impacting the baseball and lifting the baseball, because there is some stupid pop in there. But, you know, Bogenpohl at least getting off to a good start, average and OPS wise. A couple more singles recently, but some good signs of life. Although I am planting my flag on Gasparino Island. I'm pretty excited.
I love it.
About Willie G.
I can't wait. I'm in on Willie G too. I believe it. I've never seen him play, and I couldn't be more excited. All right.
Good.
Thursday night, the 13th, La Scala's Fire in the Northeast. We're going to be hanging out, watching the Field of Dreams game. Phillies tickets giveaway. It's going to be so much fun. Please come hang out with us. I can't wait. And I'm excited to do baseball movie trivia. Mix it up a little bit. You know, right in my wheelhouse there.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably going to have to carry the lion's share there.
Yeah. I won't expect it from you. I'm going to do extra. I'm going to have like easy and hard questions so I can gauge the audience and see where we're at. It's going to be really fun. So I can't wait coming out with this.
Like, what kind of dog was it that picked up the baseball?
I very close. I had a question close to that as an easy one. Do you want me to just give it out here? Okay. So there's who signed the baseball?
Okay.
The
that's dog. A good one.
That's a good one. You know, so those are the kind of things I was thinking. So it'll be
what fun. Was the lifeguard's name in the
Wendy Peppercorn. So we'll have fun with it. It'll be awesome. And of course, we'll be back later in the week to react to Cardinals series. Pretty big series, actually, in terms of the Cardinals only a couple games, minor game and a half, whatever it is. Like, they're right. Maybe it's a couple more than that, but they are in that, you know, it's obviously the Phillies and Diamondbacks tied for that last wild card spot. The Padres one game behind them, then it's the Cardinals right there. So it's a pretty big series. And then obviously
you got to bury them. Painter versus Dobbins, Sanchi versus Palante, and Wheeler versus Leahy. So you got Sanchez and Wheeler in a
important series. That's
in
big.
A series, you should take care of business.
Yeah, so that's huge. All right, we will be back later in the week, Thursday night, coming out with us, and start winning some games, boys. Please, can we turn this thing around and not talk about, are you going to freaking make the playoffs? Like, enough with that. All right.
Yes.
We'll be back later in the week. Until then, he's Fritz and Seltzer.
When your day moves fast, between getting everyone out the door, meal prepping, and trying to find a small moment for yourself, the products you use should make things easier, not harder. That's where Ello comes in. Ello makes thoughtfully designed water bottles, tumblers, and glass food storage containers that fit right into your life, making hydration and storing meals easy, even on your busiest days. Visit elloproducts.com and use code TRYELLO20 for 20% off your first purchase. That's ELLOproducts.com. Code TRYELLO20.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's infinitely refreshing!